And welcome to Card Knock Life, episode number 34. I'm your host, Daryl Feltner, here with hosts Corey Murphy. And Nick Keller.
Why is Corey yelling?
I don't know, but I tried to do the Charlie Murphy thing and he just didn't.
Man, I knew that was what was going to come out of my mouth, so that's why I had Daryl do the intro.
Yeah, he failed. So welcome to the episode today. We got a few things to talk about today. We have everyone's favorite thing, the bannings in Modern. I'm sure everyone knows all about this. We'll get to it shortly.
Yeah.
As well as some sideboard discussions for Modern and things like that. We have a best of five news back in the top eight of Pro Tours.
And yeah, let's get that right out of the way.
You want to start there?
Yeah, let's start there because it's going to be the shortest conversation.
Let me finish the overview.
Yeah, and the last one. Go on, sorry.
And the last thing is everyone's favorite thing that we do with all of the spoilers, the old MFK, Mary, Finance, and Kill for Oath of the Gatewatch. So, Corey, you want to start with best of five back in the top eight. Go ahead.
Yeah. So help me with this name now. Hélène Bergeau.
Hélène Bergeau.
All right, she tweeted this, and this is probably the smallest of news points today, but in any other week, it would be a big deal. The Pro Tour has returned to the best of five in the top eight, which apparently was not the case for a while. It went to best of three, and there was all sorts of drama that I don't quite have the background on, but just putting that out there. Daryl, you got it?
Yeah. So, for the longest time, originally at Pro Tour 1, the Pro Tour finals were to be a best of 7. They made it a best of 5. And pretty much every Pro Tour until, like, last year or the year before, they moved to best of 3 formats in the Pro Tour then. It was best of 5 in the top 8 for every match. Best of 5.
Yeah.
And so you'll notice that if you watch the Eggs Pro Tour where Stanislav Sivka beat Yuya Watanabe. Or it's not Yuya. It's the other guy. I'm bad at this. I'm dumb. I'm just going to pretend that I didn't screw that up.
All right, the other guy.
Yeah, but all the other Pro Tour top eights that you'll see, most of them, best of five. So until recently, they moved to best of three. The pros were outraged by this because, you know, the tuning that you put in the effort to win sideboard games and things like that weren't really as pronounced in a best of three format. It didn't let skill really win out over variance. Like, sure, you can have three very bad variance games, but it's much harder to have three very bad variance games in a best of five than it is to have, like, one bad variance game that just sinks your ship in a best of three where your matchup is, like, 70-30 and you're on the bad side. So
yeah. Now this has potential to be really long. Am I right? I mean, there's no time limit in the top eight. You could play a best of five match for 2.5 hours, couldn't you?
You could.
Yes.
Which,
in fact, control mirrors in the top eights have gone three and a half hours.
Wow.
Because it's not a matter of, like, as long as you're both playing at a reasonable pace.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll end up playing 3 hour match.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you run into things where, like, if you watched the World Magic Cup, where Sean McLaren took, like...
Yeah, right?
Or not Sean McLaren. who won the world title this year?
The Danish guy, right?
No. Hold on. I have to Google this and look stupid.
All right. Should have been prepared, Daryl.
I know. I didn't know I was going to go on this tangent.
You never do. That's why it's a tangent.
Seth Manfield. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Not the Danish guy.
Not the Danish guy, no. It was Manfield against Turtenwald. Mm-hmm. Turtenwald got a slow play warning for taking, like, a minute to decide whether or not to cast, like, one of his spells and how to, like, sequence his turn. But then Seth Manfield spent, like, 4.5 minutes on his turn trying to figure out how to attack.
Yeah.
And he got no slow play warning. So, like, if slow play was actually enforced and both players played at a reasonable pace, these matches wouldn't be along.
I mean, like, if you're going to make the optimal plays and there's no time limit, you might as well take all of the time that you've got. Because in order to really fully think things in, you've got to really, like, play out, you know, like, 6-7 steps in a row in your head, right? Like, the next 7 moves. And in order to do that, you're constantly processing a lot of information.
You are.
I get
but,
it.
But at the same time, like, there are slow play rules in Magic 4.
Right, right, yeah. But it's like, I mean, it's not black and white, what's slow play and what's not.
No, it's not. This is where we get into those discussions. Kind of like what I just said, that why did Owen get, like, 50 seconds to make his decision where Seth got
four. Right, exactly.
And, you know, what's...
But what's easy to someone is not easy to another. And if your opponent doesn't understand what variables you're considering, like obviously, you know, what's in your hand, then they don't know what you're processing at the time. And, you know, like it could be considered slow play for them, but they don't know you've got three combat tricks at the ready, you know?
Right. And now, and I can tell I'm going to try and cut this off.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Because we're going to get on the slow play tangent of, well, what is slow play really? Is there, like, a time limit? Is there, like, a definition?
Fair.
You know, should you be thinking while your opponent's doing things so that you're not playing slow? And then as variables are revealed, do you, like, get to reset the timer on what slow play? That's just a big mess.
Yeah.
It's not great, but, you know, you have to take reasonable actions at a reasonable pace. You can't, like, take 2 minutes to figure out your land sequencing. You know?
Yep. All right, so we're going to move on then?
Yeah, I'm good there.
Let's get on to the really big news this week. This is probably going to take up most of the podcast. I went 3-0 at my pre-release.
What a boss.
But seriously, if we could just spend 5 minutes, the pre-release was sweet. They have a different format for the bricks that you get this year, or this set. And, you know, in the past, you've kind of gotten those, like, sort of flat rectangular cases, little cardboard boxes. This time around, they're actually like a deck box with a little pocket for a die in the bottom of it, which is really cool.
Oh, neat.
They did that with the last one, didn't they?
They probably did. I wasn't there.
Okay.
But I much prefer this method.
Yes. This one's much better because you can have, like, your deck and your deck box, not, like, three separate piles of cards and one being your deck. And
there's even a little divider for your sideboard, which is cool.
Yep.
So it's actually a functional like piece of cardboard rather than something that you just toss because it totally falls apart on you. But you also don't pick your colors, which is great too, because you like can truly make a decision based on your pool and not get like locked into like, you know, whatever the pre-release card's color is, you know. And so that was much more intriguing to me. My pool was insane. I usually like have a really terrible pool in these, but I played a white blue deck, which was base like it was basically a mono white deck with some splash blue and then Eldrazi. And I had a Gideon. I had a Linvala, the Preserver.
Oh.
And I had a Reality Smasher in the deck. And I had plenty of blue, like waste producing or colorless producing sources that were not wastes. There were so many people playing wastes because they felt they had to get the colorless mana. But in the set, there are plenty of commons and uncommons that just give you colorless lands where you just don't need to do that. So just like really natural ramp spells like, you know, Hedron Archive or some of the like blue Eldrazi commons are like your best like mana dorks for colorless.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Eldrazi spawns, yeah.
So I had a really, really sick deck. Yeah, I got smoked in the last round though. So I went 3-0 and I drew with the guy. We split the packs. We played for two packs at the end. And I was, like, really confident in my deck, so I was kind of, like, thinking to myself, like, we should just play this out. Like, I could take this guy down with my Gideons and everything. Like, I feel really, really confident in this. But actually, like, I just drew so bad. I didn't even see any of my bombs, and the other guy killed me with this 2-1 flying Death Touch Bat for 3, which is, like, the best card in Limited. Yeah, and it's even better because if you gain life, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for every instance. So it's much better than the guy from... what was it in the concept? I think there was like a harpy or something that was 3 for a 2/1 flying that like lost both players a life when he came into play. Like,
yeah,
I played the hell out of that guy, and this card is just strictly better.
Yes.
So it's a very fun set to draft. It works really well with the Battle for Zendikar. A lot of people were complaining that there's no ingest in this set, so it doesn't really have that identity. But the colorless mana thing makes for a really interesting pre-release, and it's something that like every color can do, and it's not necessarily a build. It's just something that you happen to be able to, you know, just sort of include if it's worthwhile. And that was cool.
That's good.
Did you ever do turn 4 Gideon, turn 5 the Trampler guy into turn 6 Anapenta?
Linvala? I did not. No, but...
I just would have scooped like way...
The tilt scoop, just
You can't really beat Gideon.
You win the round, sir.
Yeah.
That guy's pretty tough. Gideon is not a bad one.
So there's an ability called Cohort, that you tap another ally to do an ability. And oh, I happen okay. to have three of these cohort grizzly bears that are white, and they gain you 2 life. My plan was basically just to stall out and gain a whole bunch of life until I draw into, you know, like the bomb pieces. But like, those are my only allies in the deck, so I just happened to like draw into enough to tap for the cohort effect and you know block and chump and gain some life or something, just to kind of like last a couple more turns until I've got the right mana for my big rares. So
sure,
worked out. Anyways, that was my experience. It was a good time. I did the midnight, and I was definitely like losing my mind at the end of that because it was late. It was 4:30 in the morning.
Because you're old.
Yeah, it was the only one I could make it to. So, anyways, going forward, I wish they would just, you know, say, okay, people can't stay up all night on Friday. Let's just have the pre-release start Friday afternoon. I know that defeats the purpose of like a midnight release, but you know, Black Friday starts on Thursday. Well, we might as well move this forward too, right?
I mean, I'm in. Totally.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. We can move on.
All right. Good.
All right. The real big news. Who's got this one?
Modern bannings?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean popper bannings?
All right. Nathan, let's hear about the popper bannings.
No, nobody
popper
cares.
Popper bannings. Okay.
No, I mean, I will. I have the whole article here. I will read all of it if you really want.
No. Some fairies banned. I don't remember its name, but I remember.
Cloud of Fairies. It untaps lands.
Okay. Untaps. That's all I really want to talk about. Done with that. All
right, you
that
win.
That is quite significant, though, because not only does it make like the Cloud of Fairies unplayable, but it also makes what's the spell Stutter Sprite
yep.
a lot
it
worse.
Makes, yeah, it makes the Delver decks a lot worse. It makes yeah. the.
Okay.
I'm surprised yep. they didn't ban Delver in Pauper. Okay. I mean, this is a tangent happening right now.
Oh, sorry.
Brainstorm? Brainstorm with Evolving Wilds is so broken.
Nope.
All right. Anyways, Pauper's really fun. I'm sure this will shake things up a bit. No one's, like, extremely invested in these commons, so there wasn't as much outrage as there was for Splinter Twin.
What? Splinter Twin got banned?
There's a lot of rage here.
There's a lot
you
of
you show me to read both of the banning announcements because I have them right here.
Sure.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, I'll try and do this as quickly as possible. In Modern, we look for competitively viable decks that frequently win before the first turn. The Amulet Bloom deck has reached a performance level that's consistent with those criteria. And then it kind of goes into detail of finishes. Justin Cohen at Pro Tour Favorite Forge, Benjamin Miller at PT Oklahoma City, Star City Open, where Bobby Fortinelli won. And I think that not Bobby Fortunelli winning, but the way he won in the last round of the tournament is what cemented that this deck was James banned.
Mm-hmm.
So in game one, he mulligans to six, keeps a no lander, or keeps a hand with just Vesuva and a bounce land, or keeps a bounce land, sorry, and an amulet, scries and finds Vesuva. Keeps it and on his he goes first and passes. His opponent plays an island. He puts his Vesuva into play, making an island. On his turn three, basically turn two because he skipped his turn one land drop. He plays an amulet, plays a bounce land, makes a primeval titan on turn three. Turn three, air quotes, with having basically played 2 turns worth of lands. So skipped his first turn and still won the game on turn two. And then the second game he loses. And then the third game, on the last turn of the game, he creates a position where he plays 3 Amulet of Vigors, plays a Bounce Land and casts Primeval Titan, and goes and gets a green Bounce Land and a Teleri West, makes 6 mana, transmutes Teleri West for Summoner's Pact because his Teleri West made 3 blue.
Mm-hmm.
Returning the Teleri West with the bounce land, getting a Summoner's Pact, making another Primeval Titan, going and getting Teleri West, blue-green bounce land, doing the same thing, putting all 4 of his Primeval Titans into play, ending with Boros, Garrison, Slayer, Stronghold, giving 3 of them haste, and attacking, ending with Vesuva, Sunholm, giving 2 of them double strike.
That's how it goes. Daryl, that's the last time
magic was played.
That's the last time you'll ever have to explain that.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Legacy's still a format.
No, shut the hell up.
I don't think Legacy has anything to offer the deck that it doesn't already get in Modern. Before the ban. Except for Summer Bloom.
So, anyway, I'll go back to reading the what I was saying. With an Amulet of Vigor and a Summer Bloom and a Simic Growth Chamber, you can make a Primeval Titan on turn two or a Hive Mind attack.
In a way... All right, sorry. I'm gonna cut back to this conversation about Legacy here. Tangent again. In a way, Pact of Negation is just better for the deck than Force of Will, isn't it? Because it's a combo.
Depends of how you're comboing off. Like if you want to like protect your prime time, like and you don't have the lands to protect it next turn if they like wasted you or something.
There is no next turn. Game ends now.
I guess so. If you're ending it now, yes. Then yes.
It's an easier Force of Will.
Yep, it's a freer Force of Will.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not to mention the matchups are better. Anyways, Daryl, what were you saying?
All right, continue. Go on. So I looked at the two cards that provided the ability to create 7 mana on turn 2 and make these Primeval Titans.
Yeah.
Which were Summer Bloom and Amulet of Vigor. They said banning Amulet of Vigor leads to Summer Bloom still being a very potent ramp deck because you could just play it on turn 2, put a couple of bounce lands and another land into play, and end up with 5 mana on turn 2, leading you to a turn 3 Primeval Titan. So they left Amulet of Vigor in the format because you could do something with Amulet of Vigor in tapped lands, but I think it's going to be more explosive because you could turn two, play Azusa, and then like bounce land, and get ahead anyway. So I don't really know exactly what they're doing.
Are you suggesting that this deck still survives or a new deck comes?
I mean, it's a very much worse version of the same deck for people.
Right.
They'll just have to play 4 Azusa.
I think it's done for. It's going to change. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some sort of Amulet of Vigor shenanigans. People are inspired to brew with it because they've got them and they paid $10 for them.
Yep.
It's a weird choice because the Amulet is very much designed to be a piece of a combo. Like, it's got it written all over it, right?
Right.
When would you need that ability in a fair deck?
Right.
Never.
So they didn't ban this card. I mean, they're just asking for another combo to be made out of it. Somewhere down the line, we're going to get a second deck that uses Amulet of Vigor to combo. It probably will use the Ravnica lands, too.
Hats off to those people that figure it out. I mean, and so, they, you know, based on all that explanation that I just read, it won't have... So, and they even said it, you know, the deck with Amulet of Vigor is more distinctive and has more potential as more tap lands are printed. Azusa is a potential replacement for Bloom, but less efficient. So while there's a deck to play, it won't have turn 3 wins. That's basically what I said. Good. And then, so they complete with, for those reasons, Summer Bloom is banned in Modern. And then...
All right, smell you later, Summer Bloom. No one's really bitching about this one.
Nobody!
You could see it from a mile away.
What I've done about what I want to say about this.
Yeah.
But I am not going to complain about Summer Bloom being gone.
Yeah. Even awesome. Summer Bloom players get it.
Yeah.
Summer Bloom was not healthy for the format. No matter what way you look at it, everybody was expecting this to be coming on the banhammer.
Yes. Well, I kind of expected it to be Amulet instead of Summer Bloom because, like, Summer Bloom and putting yourself at, like, a steep card disadvantage is fine, I thought, but I think they might be right based on reading their information that, you know, if we expect another ramp deck to continue if we keep Summer Bloom, then yeah, I can see that.
But, Twin, what in the fuck?
I will read on.
All right, read on.
We also look for decks that hold a large percentage of the competitive field to reduce the diversity of the format.
Affinity.
Antonio Del Moral Leon won Pro Tour Fate Reforged was Splinter Twin. Yelgar Wigasma finished third. Twin has won two of the four Modern Pro Tours, top eight of the last six Modern Grand Prix. The last Modern Grand Prix in Pittsburgh had three Splinter Twin decks, including Alex Bianchi's winning deck. Decks that are this strong can hurt diversity by pushing decks that it defeats out of competition. They can also reduce diversity by supplanting similar decks. For instance, Sean McLaren won Pro Tour Born of the Gods playing this Just Guy Control deck. Alex Bianchi won our most recent Pro Tour, most recent Modern Grand Prix playing a similar deck, but adding the Splinter Twin combination. So I'm going to take a look at the Just Guy Control deck for that they were speaking of.
It's just a Kiki Resto list, I think.
That's what I was thinking. I just want to make sure I'm not wrong. So, that is not true.
No?
No. Sean McLaren's blue-white-red control deck that he won Pro Tour Born with the Gods with two Ajani Vengeance, four Snapcaster, a Click, an Anger, Couple of revelations, 4 bolts, 3 path, a spell snare, 2 remand, 4 mana leak, 4 helix, 3 electrolytes, 3 cryptic, 26 lands, and then like random sideboard cards. It's just actually a blue white red control deck. Not no Kiki Resto, no fanciness, just like I'm going to play these blue and white red cards and you're not going to have fun, and then I'm going to cast Sphinx's Revelation and you're going to have less fun.
Yeah.
So that is in fact what he's doing. And eventually I'm gonna blow up your lands with a giant engine. So
this is exactly that deck that everyone plays but never gets there with. I didn't even realize this was in the top 8 of a Pro Tour.
It won a Pro Tour.
Oh, it won? Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a... Oh.
I did not too long ago, that. Either. Like 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, this won a Pro Tour. Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas.
All February right. 22nd, 2014. It's almost 2 years ago. Correct. Anyways.
Yeah.
Alex Bianchi played a similar deck at Splinter Twin. Boring. Similarly, Teamer Tempo used to see play at high level once, but has been supplanted by Teamer Twin. We considered what one would do with the cards from a Splinter Twin deck with Splinter Twin banned. In this case of Jeskai or Teamer, there are similar decks to build. In other cases, there's Kiki Jiki as a replacement. In the interest of competitive diversity, Splinter Twin is banned from modern.
Boo!
Why would you boo this? Why?
Oh my god. I have lots of reasons why.
Would it be because you just spent money on Splinter Twin?
That's part of it, but that's true for so many people, though. You know, here's the thing. Alright. So, I've been here before. I used to play Pod, right?
Yeah.
And this is the second time. When Pod was banned, what were we all saying? We're like, okay, Splinter Twin is going to be hands down the best deck in the format, right? It's going to be everywhere, right? And it never was as prevalent as Pod was, even after it got banned. But all of a sudden, this deck is banned. It's not even accounting for most of the meta. Looking on Modern Nexus right now, this is the meta of the last month. This is number 4. It's 6.2%.
Really?
Affinity is 8.3% in first. I think this is a pretty diverse meta. This is the last month only. Now, you can look back even further if you want, and I'm sure you'll see more.
Hold on. Let me... Because is it just blue-red twin it's looking at, or is it all forms of twin?
That's a good question. Let's look at MTG Top 8 here. This is the same situation.
I have MTG Goldfish. On MTG Goldfish, the modern metagame is 8% or 8.7% twin, and that's the number one deck, and that's just blue-red twin.
Okay. What's number two?
So that does not account for... any other twin decks. Let me pull it up because the other twin decks will probably be lower. Number two is Affinity at 8.26%.
All right. Now, here's the difference between those two decks, though. Affinity is almost always like the same, like, you know, 55 cards plus 20 innovations, including a sideboard, right?
Sure.
Whereas Twin is like, it's a different deck in, you know, there are maybe 4 or 5 different versions of the same combo, right? So you've got your Teamer, you've got your Grixis, you've got your blue red, and then you've got the Jeskai one, and people are continuing to create new versions of that deck. So if their problem is that there's not enough innovation in the format, I don't think that's true at all, because the most recent results, the one that they use as an example, is exactly that. That blue white red white twin deck is not a blue red twin deck. It's totally different.
Right, but it's still
a twin deck.
Right, okay, but I mean, it's the same strategy as
I'm playing
an aggro deck, you know?
I'm playing Devil's Advocate. I agree with you. But, like, you can... So, like, the problem with... It's kind of like this problem Pod had was I tried building a deck that was, like, creatures and things, but why am I not just playing Pod? So, like, in Modern, the thing is, like, well, I want to be playing, like, kind of kill spells, kind of slow you down a little bit.
So,
why don't I just play Twin?
Let me be more direct at that. Okay. I want to play Snapcasters and Lightning Bolts. Why don't I just play Twin?
You could play other decks.
No, doesn't make any sense. Why would I not play Twin if I'm going to play Snapcasters and Bolts? Like,
I don't know. I think in a way, Snapcaster and Bolt is a core to like a deck in itself, right? So you've got your twin as an option, and that just happens to mix those two pieces. It's got the twin combo and it's got the Snap Bolt plan. But there are plenty of other decks that run the Snap Bolt plan. For example, Delver. You've got.
Sure. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that statement either.
But Scapeshift. Yeah, go on.
But all of those plans are clearly inferior to Turn 3 Exarch, Turn 4 Your Dad.
Right.
Like, very clearly inferior.
I,
And, you know, oh, you happen to path my Exarch. Okay. Bolt you, snap bolt you, attack you for 2. Bolt you, snap bolt you, attack you for 4. Oh, you're at 2? Oh, go. Kill my Snapcasters. Okay, Pester Mite, attack you for dead. Like, that's...
But is Twin the problem, though? Because personally, I would prefer to play a control version of the deck that doesn't have the combo at all. I don't like playing Deceiver Exarch. The card sucks. You know, it's got upside... In that it can do other things besides be a part of the combo, but I would much rather that was a Planeswalker. But I feel like I have to play Twin in Modern right now because there's free so wins. Many decks that I can't beat without that combo option.
It's free wins. There you go.
It's not free though because you're playing it at the expense of other cards that can be a win condition in other ways. For example, you replace that with any of the Planeswalkers in the control deck.
Deal. All right. I'll play this with you.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to play a Deceiver Exarch. Do you have a removal spell in your hand? Nope, you're dead. That, like, the end of the game, period.
Yes, I get that.
That is too strong to be able to be combined with one of the best grindy pieces in Modern, which is Snapcaster and Lightning.
I don't think that's true at all, though, like, because it's not that hard to have a removal spell turn 4, and then they also have to, like, go and tap out on turn 4 if you have a removal spell. And they tap out on 4, and you just 2-for-1 them for 2 right. mana for their 4. Like, it's not a inherently broken strategy because they are spending 7 mana over the course of 2 turns to do an infinite combo. Like, that's not anywhere broken at all when you compare it to, like... I mean,
it's not broken, but the fact that it exists makes all of the other blue-red X strategies relatively inferior.
Fair. I mean... The fact that Shand exists makes all the other green-black strategies relatively inferior.
No.
The problem is this.
The green-black strategies, you can play Abzan, you could play Sultai. All those decks have popped up.
Sultai is not a deck. Jund and Jonk are the same deck.
I mean, relatively.
They're the same difference as Grixis Twin versus Teemer Twin. You know, they're just different versions of the same core.
I don't disagree with this. Like, I'm not disagreeing with your statements at all, if you'll notice this.
I know you're not.
I'm saying that, like, I don't disagree with their idea of, because of the fact that we want there to be diversity.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to be counterintuitive with the new meta coming out with the diversity of the thing, because I think Twin was a policeman of the... format where we have now lost that. Now everybody's just going to go haywire and just go like balls to the wall aggro or play Tron.
Right.
So I think
right.
Modern's going to look a lot shittier. Because like when Pod left, because Pod was kind of a policeman as well in the format. When Pod left, the resurgence of like Infect and Burn became much more higher because like you're not playing like Kitchen Sphinxes and like dudes like clog up the board. That like there was just not a good creature based deck that could do that anymore. So like fast aggro strategies were now viable, and now that you take away like the best Snapcaster Bolt deck in the format, like I think like when I first read it, I was excited because like Zoo gets a huge boost because if there's a lot less Bolt Snap Bolton, like Wild Nacatl is going to be around for a while now. So I think the format's just going to be a lot more Infect, a lot more Affinity, a lot more Zoo, and a lot more Tron. I think BGX gets out of the format because it loses its best format, or it loses its best matchup. So I think their call for saying we need diversity in the format, I think, is ruined because they took out this policeman in the format.
It's like pulling one leg off of a 3-leg table. Right? Now the balance is totally offset of the whole thing because everything is relying on the others.
Right, like because it's like an ecosystem, and where like you take out the top apex predator, like the lower tier things are just gonna go crazy, because like it was like a gatekeeper to make sure like stupid like non twin combo decks were kept in check. So like ad nauseum, I think is gonna be very good in this new meta as well. So I think this format's going to be a lot more clunkier, and it's gonna be a lot more derpy with like how many different types of decks you're gonna see.
Have either of you casted the card Remand? I just want to ask this question. For you, assuming that like the clunkier combo decks just become infinite better, Remand's still a magic card.
It's not a good magic card when you're losing.
It's not like, a good matchup card when you're losing, but if your opponent's trying to combo you, you're just like, no, do that later.
What? But why are you playing blue? Like, there's almost no reason to play blue in the format anymore. You have Snap, and you have Remand, and you have
Howling Mine. That's why.
Ooh.
No.
All right, let's go back to something here for a second. So, somebody reposted and like actually transcribed a conversation that Tom LaPeel had with Cass Wiley and Ben Bateman, who do the Masters of Modern cast. This is from 2015, April of 2015. They're asking Tom about, you know, his experience with Wizards, and Tom was a big proponent of getting rid of the Modern Pro Tour. And so, basically, if you read through this transcript, and I'll put it in the show notes, it explains how his intention there was to sort of avoid things like this. Because he wants to make this a format for the players and not for the pros. But yes. Wizards' opinion on this whole thing is that in order for this to be a Pro Tour format, they've got to have bands like this to keep the meta fresh and interesting for the viewers who are watching the Pro Tour. So, like... That freaks me out a little bit, because then it's like very much a manufactured shift. It's like, we are going to create this need to innovate at the expense of our customers. You know, like a lot of our customers. If this is one of the most played decks in the meta, like there are plenty of people that are going to be irritated by this because their investment just got shot to shit. But it's for the Pro Tour. I mean, what's the choice that you would make here? Would you prefer to not have a Pro Tour so that you could keep your deck intact?
Before we continue on this Pro Tour tangent, I actually just – I randomly logged into Twitter while you were talking because I figured to monologue for a moment. And I don't know if you guys have heard of Cardboard Crack, the comic, the satirical Magic the Gathering comics.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have a Cardboard Crack about this actual topic that we're discussing. It says, if you want a modern Pro Tour – guy in Wizards of the Coast shirt. If you want a modern Pro Tour – we have no choice but to ban cards every year to make sure it is a diverse and interesting format. Meanwhile, in Standard, two players are playing. The first one, I play a Siege Rhino. The second one, I play a Siege Rhino. The third one, or the first one, I play a Siege Rhino. The second one, I play a Siege Rhino. I mean, like, this kind of says it all. Like, Standard is limited by a card pool, and the decks will be very interesting because one deck will sort of rise to the top and we'll get to hear the pilot flagship card of that deck. We'll hear that card's name a whole hell of a lot. It's the same thing here. What, you know, why are we doing that? Right. So.
Well, okay. So I find that bitching works best when you have solutions to offer. And I've come up with four solutions here, and I'm gonna put them all out there, and I want to hear what you guys think about these. Are these possible? Is this gonna cause? Yeah, Nick. Sorry.
If you're not bitching loud enough, I think louder bitching is better than solutions, from my experience.
All right. Here are my offerings. Here are my offerings of the conversation.
Go ahead.
The first one, and wait till I get through all four before you chime in here. Because
I didn't know if you wanted like thought reaction.
No. Just give it a second here. So my first option one. Pro Tour banned list looks different than the general banned list. Okay, in which case they can change the banned list for the Pro Tour every time it occurs. Okay, and they'll give them a couple months to build their deck. All right, maybe it's crazy. Here's option two: more frequent bannings and unbannings. If we are banning things so frequently that we could expect maybe Splinter Twin to be unbanned in just a few months, it's worth holding on to these cards for that reason, and the value is not going to tank right away. I can think of an app game that I used to play in college that did an ELO system that every month had a new banned list. And it was interesting because it caused you to build new decks, but you would still hold on to the pieces of the good decks because, you know, like in the next month, there was going to be a different combination of cards. So there's constant innovation going on. It was really cool. More aggressive hate cards printed is option three. Okay, we see some of that in things like Molten Volley, right, for Twin, and it seemed to do a fine job.
Rending Volley,
yeah.
Okay, I was like, Molten Volley?
Yeah, you know what I mean.
And he said the Twin, volley. And I got it. All right.
And then
good.
Number four is a poll from the community on the bans. I mean, if this was not a surprise to us, we would not be as upset about it. And if it's something like Wizards is actually going through and listening to the outcries of ban amulet, I'm tired of losing to that. Will they base their banning decisions on what the community actually wants and not what they want? All right, those are my four. Go. What do you think?
Can I add one more to the
four? Yeah, go for it.
Yep. I read on Reddit on this topic of like a commander, like the people who run the commander universe, whatever. They have like an orange and red list,
mm-hmm.
and so they can like add like, hey, like, you know, we're thinking prime time's a little too good for EDH. We're gonna think about putting him on the orange list, so he's gonna be like on the watch list for that. So that kind of goes with like you're like letting him know it's gonna be banned sooner. Train of thought, but like having just like and like a warning list and then like a severe warning, like this thing's probably going to get banned soon.
Yeah.
Kind of list, just so then like there's transparency of like what they're thinking, because like nobody expected this out of the blue for Twin. But I also really like your idea for the separate Pro Tour ban list, just so then like Wizard gets what they want of like a format where it's diverse. But I don't know if that really holds true in real life, because like you want to emulate the Pro Tour, so like you're going to be getting like all the decks that they have. So I don't know if that really works out, but I like the idea in concept.
So well, that kind of goes along with the more frequent on bannings and bannings, where there's maybe a season, you know, like maybe a 3-month period where there's a certain ban list in place.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, so go
I'm
ahead.
I'm just going to try and hit all these points at once. So number one was Pro Tour list different.
Yeah.
Okay, not possible, because then you're taking your the point of your coverage and like your promotional tool, which is, you know, this is the gigantic stage that if you invest in this game and try and get good at it, you can be here too. And you're disconnecting those things, which is the opposite of everything Wizards trying to do with organized play and their marketing strategy. They're trying to link those two things.
Legit.
0% chance that'll happen.
Yep.
Two. I forget what you said and what order you said. I remember them, but I don't remember the order, so I'm going to go in order.
Two. Right, go for it.
What was two?
Oh, two was more frequent bannings than unbannings.
That one, it kind of defeats the purpose of Modern. So what was the first thing they said about Modern? The first thing they said about Modern is they want a non-rotating
format.
With less of the card restrictions of length. Well, if I'm banning things every 3 months... That sounds like, oh, I don't know, there's a format that I used to play. I think it's called Standard. It sounds like Standard. That's not a non-rotating format. So that idea, out of here. Get it out.
Now you're taking that differently than the way I intended it, though. But it's more frequent bannings and unbannings. So things are going to be put on the list for a temporary period of time.
So it's still a rotating format, is what I'm saying. Like, what you're saying is, like, you're basically developing Modern into Standard grab bag. You're like, oh, but they decided to unban Stoneforge Mystic, so I hope you had those still lying around. And everyone's like, well, shit, I don't have Stoneforge Mystic. I gotta go buy those, and they're like $9,000 now.
Well, if you
be banned next month, so do I really want to pay $9,000 for Stoneforge, or do I want to wait until it's off season?
Well, that's gonna affect its price, though, Daryl. I mean, but the thing is, you expect it. You expect it. It's not gonna be like, oh, surprise, it's back. It's gonna be like, yeah, that'll be back in a month, because that's how this format works now.
And yeah, it allows like more decks to be like viable. Like, so let's say I want to play Dredgevine or something. Like, it allows decks to be like played, and then like if it's overpowered for that 3 months, it's legal. They can just take it off right away. So it allows more deck diversity, and like it allows the meta to never stagnate, because like they took off Twin off the ban list because like they claimed it was like it wasn't promoting diversity. But if you have bans and unbans every 3 months, like, then you're going to be able to have a format where, you know, one deck isn't going to reign supreme, because you're going to have decks that are going to be innovative and use the cards from the ban list for that 3 months. And then if that deck is too strong, then you just ban it again. So, like, I think it's a good way to get Modern, to get diverse, without having to, like, affect everything.
So you're affecting the most important thing in doing that, though. You're destroying consumer confidence.
I mean, they've like, already done that by...
Do it is destroying community
confidence. Yeah, I mean, Wizards has no care about consumer confidence, but if you were to do that in such a way that the message you're sending is that we're a non-rotating format, however, we're going to start doing this banning thing, and I hope you just pick up the right cards in the right seasons, because all of the cards will then spike to what their competitive prices are all the time, because you never know what card is going to become a big deal.
You think so?
Yeah. So, like, Splinter Twin was, like, how much was it in paper? Like,
it was up to 13, 15.
So, now that it's banned, I bet you it's going to take a sharp dive.
I'll check right now.
It's at $7 right now.
Okay, so its price is cut in half. Now, if $4. If we don't know, if Wizards were to out and say, hey, this is a thing where maybe Splinter Twin can come off the ban list, and maybe next month, maybe 3 months from now, maybe never. Splinter Twin's price wouldn't go down because the speculators would say, well, when it comes off the list, if the price goes down, like, why would I let the price decrease when the price will skyrocket again and I can push it over the price it's at now? Mm-hmm. So, like, the people who control the valves on the secondary market, which, we know that Wizards doesn't care about, air quotes, but will affect their player pool if people decide not to play because of the way the money fluctuates.
Now, what if this happens on a much larger scale? Like, say, next time the banned restricted list comes out, you find that Birthing Pod is unbanned. Now, granted, I understand that that would never happen, and for good reason.
I need to get my Birthing Pods back.
But wouldn't that send the message, like, okay, this is not forever. Like, there's one day where you might, have your chance to play your twin again.
I mean, yeah, but we've only seen one true unbanning in Modern.
That's true. That's what I'm saying. Like,
We've seen two.
Metabol and what?
Valakut.
Oh, yeah. Golgari, yeah. Grave Troll.
Yeah, that guy doesn't play. All right. Three. But yeah, we've seen three unbans. Golgari, Grave Troll, Valakut, and Wild.
Bitter Blossom.
That was always on the ban list.
Nope. Bitter Blossom was always on the ban list, but it's unbanned now. Bitter Blossom not banned now. Yep. So four. So, I mean, we have seen, but we've seen less unbans than we've seen bans. I will stand by your statement. Some of these bans were egregious in Treasure Cruise and Dictator Time, and some of them, we're still kind of scratching our heads, like Birthing Pod. you're like, I mean, I understand the diversity thing, but Birthing Pod not really that bad.
Well, Birthing Pod definitely needed the axe.
You think all right, so?
This is another conversation here.
But yeah, but you've kind of opened that box with...
Yeah.
You've created this situation where I don't know if my cards are still going to be legal. So the question becomes, well, will they all hold a higher price because I don't know? Or will they all be cheaper because this card could be gone in 3 weeks? So, like, the consumer confidence and the thought of, well, if I spend my money, I don't know what's going to happen. Right. Like, is a huge thing to actual people. So, like, with the current setup where it's banned once a year because you know it's going to happen right before the Modern Pro Tour, you can get a solid year out of playing your Splinter Twins if you bought them at the beginning of the year after the ban list dropped. Or whatever. As long as it wasn't just, like, super egregious like Treasure Cruise, then you could get your years without it.
Yeah, I get you.
And then number four was differing, or was a...
No, you didn't get to three either. More aggressive hate cards three. Printed is three.
Three, sorry.
Can we print? Can we print cards? Can we add cards to the card pool that solve the problems rather than take the
problems
away?
So, do you want a card like Choke to go through Standard?
It doesn't have to, though. I mean, then this option might involve like a Modern Masters type set that prints new runs, Or reprints cards that were never Modern legal.
Or reprints...
Why not? Well,
I mean, you could, but, like, what sort of hate cards are you... Are you talking about, like, a ruination? Like, how aggressive of hate are you trying to get into the format?
I'm talking, like...
What's not already there? Like, what are you looking for, I guess? Well,
yeah, that's the thing. Rending Volley is an example of one of those cards that did... Like, was the perfect piece to kill Splinter Twin. The problem was there were some certain colors of decks that don't have options for that. Okay, white's got Path to Exile. Green-black has got Abrupt Decay. Red has Rending Volley. You know, like, if you're playing mono-green, though, what do you do against Splinter Twin combo?
Dismember.
Yeah, which is an awful... Like, I suppose great. That's the best
fantastic
option.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're playing mono-green, like, you have to have downsides. Like,
you could also play Crozen Grip.
That's true. Yeah, it does work. There you go.
Beast Within.
Yeah. So.
There are cards.
Do you think, I mean, like, it seems pretty clear to me that Rending Volley was a card that was printed for Splinter Twin. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, sure. So they tried it, but I don't think that the result was necessarily a failure because the deck did not overrun the format.
I don't think, so I think you want hate cards. I think we need general better answers. Like, we don't have enough answers because Modern is such a diverse format where there's, like, all affinity, like affinity's all artifacts, burns all burn spells. You know, Tron has big mana, Drowsy has big mana. There's just too many different angles to attack for main board decks to, like, answer everything effectively in Modern, I think.
Bring back Counterspell!
I think Counterspell in Modern would make the format so much better.
Yes!
Control needs it. Control needs something.
Yes.
Give it to me. Really.
By the way, we've got Deprive, and we don't even realize it.
That card's real bad.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Have you ever picked up a land on turn two because you had to cast Counterspell?
You only play one Deprive. Have you ever played Deprive, put a basic land in your hand, and then had something to discard to Liliana of the Veil so you didn't have to discard your Snapcaster?
No. Have you ever cast an actual Counterspell? You will realize that the difference in power between
okay.
those
two I would prefer it.
So it's not big.
Like, Deprive, snapping back a Deprive versus snapping back a
Counterspell.
All right. Counterspell would be great. Can we have it?
Yes, no. Counterspell would be amazing. I think that's what Modern needs, honestly, in the format, because, like, we have a lot of hate cards already. We have, like, Kataki and Stony Silence and Malira and Spellskite and Molten Rain and Blood Moon. But, yeah, like,
just give us
our sideboard is just, like, dedicated, like, hate cards. And, like, that's not good for, like, the format. Like, Modern's the only format that really has, like, so much dedicated, like, hate for, like, all different sorts of strategies that you can be, like, unlucky that you didn't hit that strategy, but you have four cards in your sideboard to dedicate to that.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Legacy, some point has that, but that's mostly just for, like, Dredge, because, like, that attacks at such a weird angle. Which
and you only have to
play,
like, one, because you have, like, Cantrips or Sylvan Library or Top or... you know, whatever to find it. Whereas you have Serum Visions.
Correct. So you need so much more hate cards in your sideboard because you can't find them. There's so many different decks that have a unique angle of attack, and, like, you don't have any good mainboard answers via Force of Will or, like, Counterspell to actually deal with everything in the format.
Right. Yes.
So I think a broader stroke of a Counterspell that's actually playable needs to be in the format.
Fair.
Yes. All right, and number four, which was the community watch list.
Like, yes.
Letting people know.
I can see plenty of holes in this plan, but go ahead, talk
that's
first.
That's sort of on. So I don't think that the community gets a say.
Apparently not.
No, I mean, like, giving the community a say makes things disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
You can court the community by allowing them to provide information and feedback and say, hey, you guys should put this on the, like, the yellow list. Like, this is something you should test out to see if it's too big. But, like, when it comes to, like, the, hey, this is going to get banned, the community gets no input. Like, should get zero input. You have R&D, you have testers, you have intelligent people that you can reach out to. You can utilize the gigantic swath of professionals that you have, whose ability to play this game is vastly better than anyone in R&D. No offense to R&D. But, like, they develop the game, and the players figure out how to screw it up. And we're pretty good at it. Some of us much better than others. But Sam Black.
So they can't work fast enough to keep up with the thousands of people that are working to break the cards, you know?
But as far as, like, if there's a card on the watch list, you have resources to go, hey, guy X, if I were to have Ancestral Visions on my unbanned watch list, would this be bad for the format? And, you know, guy X spends a week kind of brewing with Ancestral Visions testing and goes, yeah, here's some really disastrous decks that could pop up if you let that happen. And Wizards goes, all right, let's play one of these against our stock list. And they're like, oh, that's awful. Let's not unban that card. There are people that you can ask to assist you with this sort of thing.
All right. Well, I guess and this is kind of related to the yellow and orange list, or the red and orange list, or whatever it was that Nick suggested. And I saw that post as well, Nick, on Reddit. I think the main issue here is that this... everything is, like, so fragile, and so even merely suggesting that something is being considered is going to cause fluctuations in the price, and it's going to cause people to freak out. But in order for this sort of thing to happen, you either A, have to just listen to the community in the first place and do some research on what people are, you know, talking about, because there's plenty of sources of information out there where people are like, okay, this is, you know, this is what I hope is going to get banned. Or you just tell them, you know, these are the things that are on the chopping block. How much would you be pissed if they were gone? But I understand why that doesn't work. I think the problem is, and the reason everyone is so upset about it, is because, for example, Splinter Twin was just such a surprise to everyone. It was not anything that anyone was really asking for, except for the people that have the bad matchup against Splinter Twin. There were definitely more people in favor of the deck existing than there are in favor of it being banned out of existence. Don't you agree?
So, I'm going to put all of my cards on the table here. I hate Splinter Twin.
All right, you're one of those people.
Let me finish.
Go on.
I hate it with a passion. I think it's very silly. I think it was, in fact, the exact definition of modernist format. Like, I thought that Splinter Twin sat perfectly as the peak power level in modern. Like, hey, you know what? This is the most powerful thing you can do on turn four. And that's kill you. Like, see you later. You're done. And is it super frustrating to lose a game to Splinter Twin just because you didn't have it? Absolutely. Or is it frustrating that, you know, your Splinter Twin opponent waits till turn five and just like, all right, dispel you, you lose? Yeah, sure. Very, very frustrating. Completely get behind that. Really annoying. Do I think it needed to be banned? No. Not at all. Like I said, I personally, for what I thought of the power level of the format, thought that Splinter Twin was at a perfect place. Now, based on Wizards' concept of creating diversity, I agree that Splinter Twin needed to go because it's been on top of the format in the very top layer of the Earth since the beginning of the format. So, am I upset that it's gone? Not at all. Do I think it needed to leave? No.
Fair. Well, I guess I'm definitely looking forward to the changes that are going to be happening as a result of this. I fear that, as Nick mentioned earlier, Tron is going to be all over the place. It's one of my least favorite decks to play against, and I hope that it doesn't just become, you know, take the place of Splinter Twin as the 12% of the meta.
I think Tron's going to be a huge percent of the meta because it now gained 11 sideboard slots now. Like, 11 of its cards were, like, dedicated to not lose to Twin.
Right.
So now really? Gonna, like,
yeah, they had so many.
That doesn't help the deck not lose to itself, though, and I think that's the biggest problem with Tron.
No, but you still get 10 sideboard cards to deal with, like, the fast aggro decks, and you also get
it helps.
Turn coming. So, like, they have plenty of tools. Like, you can add more spell skites or whatever to make your, you know, infect deck match up better in the sideboard. So, like, I feel like Tron is going to be very hard to hate out in the next coming weeks just because they have so many sideboard slots. Like, Malira is green, and, like, that card will just, like, destroy Infect. So, that's a card.
Well, that's a thing. I mean, the other one is Eldrazi. People are freaking out about Eldrazi becoming the deck of the format. And all I have to say to that is chill out. You know, it's the same problem as Tron. I think the deck is really powerful. It's got some really degenerate lines where you just have nothing you can do against it because it's all the when you cast spells and it generates a ridiculous amount of mana. But it also shoots itself in the foot half the time. You know, it can't make it to the end of a GP. I had this conversation last week with you guys. I don't see it happening.
Correct. I think the format's going to be very binary. It's either going to be very fast aggro decks or very, like, big mana or, like, ad nauseum, where it's just going to, like, kill you on turn four or five. Like, it's either going to be...
So you guys have not... You guys have created a niche that a very old modern deck settles very comfortably into. And I'm going to say the name of this deck, and you're going to feel kind of silly. Who doesn't like a good Blue Moon every once in a while?
Oh.
So, I mean, you've basically filled out a segment of modern that this old and now very bad deck settles pleasantly into. You have fast aggro, I see. Well, I have lots of lightning bolts and snapcaster mages and spell snares for your Tarmogoyfs and electrolyzers for your X1s. Uh-huh. Oh, you say that you like to play big mana strategies. I have all these blood moons. Go to hell. oh, you say you like to play a combo. I have all these remands and snapcasters and dispels and cryptic commands.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say death and taxes or hate bears.
No,
I like hate bears a lot.
Hate bears not bad at all. One of the first decks I actively tried to learn to master in modern was Blue Moon.
Yeah,
and the meta you're describing is a niche that Blue Moon falls very comfortably into.
Right.
Now, whether you pack up extra sideboard hate of like Fulminator Mages because you want extra good against Tron or Spreading Seas, or you want to play this like super grindy control game where you can board in more counterspells and Piranos, like whatever your cup of tea is, or if you want to play a more aggressive version, you can play a more aggressive. So it's I think that Blood Moon is primed to make a bigger splash than it already does in modern.
So is that what you're calling? Are you predicting spike in Blood Moons?
I am predicting a spike in the already ridiculous price of Blood Moon.
Yes. It's down to $33.
Oh, buy them. Buy them now. Literally buy a playset of Blood Moons right now.
How much? I don't think Blood
Moons, because they'll be the most expensive.
I don't think Blood Moon will be, or the Blue Moon will be filling the exact, like it'll fill, a lot of Twin players will go to that since they have most of that card, but I don't think it's going to be played more than Twins played it, though.
I don't know, and I'm not saying that Blue Moon will be a 12% deck. What I'm saying is the meta you have described.
Yes, I agree. I agree that
the meta fits the niche very well of, hey, we need this random deck that kind of screws with everybody. Well, here's a very good candidate in all this stuff.
Right, but I wouldn't buy Blood Moons because that deck's good. I don't think.
No, I would buy Blood Moons because Tron is. If you think Tron is going to be the best deck, Blood Moon and Fulminator Mage are right where I'd start. And Blood Moon being at $30, which is about as cheap as it was, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe?
2 years ago, $10.
It was $10? Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't have a price graph in front of me. I didn't just start clicking around and get one.
All right.
I kind of want to know now. But, like, I would snap a playset of Blood Moons and be willing to explore strategies that contain them.
Yeah, well, if you're that concerned. I think Leonin Arbiter is a fine pick. I think it's already kind of started to spike, though, hasn't it? Let's check it. I think he's up to like $4 or $5.
Really?
Yeah. There are plenty of spikes going on right now. Yeah, Leonin Arbiter is about $4.
Well, all the ones I know is spiking because people are thinking like Jeff Hoogland's Kiki Cord list is going to be top tier, but I don't see it.
Yeah, Voice of Resurgence is 50.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Voice of Resurgence is like 40 online. Like, I could play the Kiki Cord deck, except Voice of Resurgence is like $40.
Yeah.
Which is really annoying, because I have all the parts for it.
Sad.
Yeah, I don't want to buy Voice of Resurgence. It makes me sad.
All right, well, should we put this aside for today and come back next week? I'm sure there will be more information next week when we get our first tournament results from Modern post Splinter Twin.
I'm sure we will.
Let's do our MFK. For those of you who are new to the podcast, MFK is Mary, our pick that we like based on the speculation and cost right now. F for finance, something that we pick up that is cheap now and may increase in price. And then K for kill, something that is seemingly overhyped according to us. So, here we go.
All right, MFK it is.
All right, who wants to start?
I can start.
All right. Go for it. You want to do all three at once, or you want to do all our M's together?
I don't care. My M and F are the same, so.
All right, go for it. Why don't you do all three then?
My M and F is Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Oh, yeah.
The 5-mana 4/4. Snapcaster Mage for 3-mana instant or sorcery. I think that guy might find. I think he's going to find a home in red decks for sure. If like a grindy deck does come out, and I think like a Blue Moon does need a finisher, and I think this helps it a lot. Plays well with the Restoration Angel. Gives it like if you're playing like blue white red Kiki and you want to side out your Kiki's game too. This is a very good card to go in the grindy matchups. I think this card's going to be not that big of a player in Modern, but like I feel like it'll fill like the same role that Keranos does, and Keranos has gotten to be quite expensive. So I think like he's like $3 to $4 now, so I think he's worth picking up quite heavily on for the next maybe not right now, but like when he's down to like $1 or $2 because everybody's opening him up, I think he'll go back up once Gatekeeper Innistrad comes out.
Keranos is $10.
Yep.
Is that? I thought you said two or three.
No, when Goblin is two or three, oh, he's a good pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I mean, there's a lot of upside to it at $2. It can only get better, right?
Right. Like, I don't think he's going – like, he's going to be seeing play in Modern, I think. Like, his body's very good. Like, 4-4 menace is, like, it's meh. But, like, you get three mana attached to it as well half the time.
Right.
So, I think he's a very good pickup at, like, $2 to $3. He's a box top promo, too, so that's foil, too. So, I think that's probably cheaper than pack foil. So, I think he's a good pickup to get right now. And then the kill, I think, is another red card, the Kozilek's Return. That card's like $25 or something right now. The Devoid Instant Speed Pyroclasm that returns back. I think that card is – I think it's good in Modern. I think it's going to be see a lot of play in Standard. But I think once it rotates out of Standard, it's going to, like, plummet because, like, it's good. But, like, it's not, like, infinitely better than, like, Volcanic Fallout or Pyroclasm or Anger of the Gods. It's a very good red sweeper, but it's not, like, the end-all be-all for sweepers.
Uh-huh.
So I think that card is overhyped for Modern.
Yeah, it's expensive. And it's not going to do anything in Standard, is it?
Yeah, the Eldrazi deck in Standard will play the hell out of it.
Oh, okay.
But, like, Tron, like, people are saying it's going to be in Tron, but, like, Tron can't activate the second part of it fairly often right now. They only have Nulamog for their, like, activation for it. But I don't see – maybe, like, the black-red Eldrazi list can play it. But, I don't know. It seems okay, but it doesn't seem $25 good.
Right. No.
It's deep. It is a mythic.
So. It is a mythic.
But the set's going to be opened a lot, and so that will bring it down a bit.
Right. Yeah, get rid of it now if you can.
All right, I'm going to jump in and do mine real quick.
Go for it.
My M is Reality Smasher. Having played it...
Really?
Having played it over the weekend, it is all that I had hoped for. But also, I predict going forward that once April hits and we lose cons, we're going to have no more fetch lands. Our battle lands are going to get significantly worse as a result. But we are going to have MTG Origins in Standard for a while. And MTG Origins gives us Painlands which produce a colorless mana. If that's the case, if our mana base shifts to a focus on Painlands, which I predict, I don't see why any deck can't run a Reality Smasher. Four and a colorless, you know? The card is bigger than a Siege Rhino. It kills a Siege Rhino, which is currently the reigning mid-range creature of the format.
But once con cycles out...
And that's true. Once con cycles out, it's not a deal. But even then,
it's a 5-5 trample haste.
Right. Yeah. The discard a card unless or counter the spell that's targeting it is pretty significant. I like it a lot in like even Modern too, because when you're recurring it, like with the Kolaghan's Command, every time you cast it, you're going to be dealing 5 damage, right? Because it's got haste and it's got trample. But then it's also a 2-for-1 when they go to kill it. So it's pretty insane value. It's it feels in that way like a 3-for-1, right? Like you're paying for your Lava Axe initially, and then after that you're getting a removal spell and whatever land they discard from their hand, you know?
Yeah.
So there's my M. My F is not Reality Smasher, because Reality Smasher is about $8. I don't see it going any higher than that. But this is probably the right price for it for a little while until it gets open more. My F is Linvala, though. And Linvala is a mythic. And it's $8, so there's not a whole lot of upside on it. But I see this as like the premier white control finisher card. It does everything you want.
It is very good.
I don't think I need to say too much more about that. But it does, you know, like all of its functions are what you want. My K
card is real good, yeah.
My K is Matter Reshaper. People are really high on the Matter Reshaper. And let me read this one just in case you guys are
unfamiliar. Oh, that one, yeah.
Matter Reshaper is 2 and a colorless for a 3/2, which is a fine value for a card like this. When it dies, reveal the top card of your library. You may put that card onto the battlefield. If it's a permanent with converted mana, cost 3 or less. Otherwise, put that card into your hand. So worst case scenario, it draws you a card when it dies. I think it's a fine card. I just don't think it's as good as people are giving it credit for. There's a lot
What's
of
the price on it?
I'm seeing a playset of them at like $27 presale, but
Stark City has them at $8.
Yeah, that seems insanely expensive to me. I see this being like a $1 card. It's not the focus of a deck that it's going to be included in because it's just so random. I mean, in standard, like best case scenario, what do you get? Like a Jace. People are talking about flipping into like Liliana of the Veil in Modern. I don't know.
You could get Monastery Mentor.
You could get, sure. But
I don't know.
It seems okay in like a Coco list, like flipping this to a Coco and then like blocking with it seems pretty good.
Or sack the Viscera Seer and then like, oh, trigger.
Yeah,
oh,
that seems like a great place for it, actually. This would be great in the pod deck, you know?
Yeah, it'd be great in pod. But here I come.
But I don't know. I think it's overpriced right now, so wait for it to go down. I don't think it's going to see much play in standard.
I could see play in the black-red Eldrazi lists in like the aggro. I think that it's probably going to come out because they got a 2-1 drop that's a 2-1. Mm-hmm. They also have like that 3-2 that gives haste to devoid creatures. So I think like a black-red Eldrazi list could come out in standard.
Two toughness right now in standard dies to almost everything because Savannah Lions are a dime a dozen. They're not what they used to be, you know? If you're playing a one drop, chances are it's got two power or it's got some utility ability that's not even going to like make it want to attack ever.
Correct.
So I'm not too excited about that one. Are you?
No, I'm not.
It's fine. It's fine.
All right.
I don't think it's going to be very good in modern or standard really at all. I think it'll be okay maybe in like Coco, but then you need to like reshape your mana base to be able to cast colorless. So I guess you play like a lot of filter lands.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a good card, but like I think in the meta we're facing, like you don't want the 3-2 for 3 that can like replace itself with something else. Like I don't think that's something that's really good.
Well, Kratz. You play it in Kratz. We haven't talked about Abzan Aristocrats yet today.
Oh my god. Shoot me!
This card is insane.
Will this joke please die?
It's not a joke. This is for real, Daryl. Could you see it in there? It's perfect.
I can see drink it. A cup of bleach, seriously.
You have a sack outlet with this guy? You swing sack.
And it gets an Antuco Husk.
Husk for the win.
It gets a.
It gets Flip Lily.
Gets oh my god that it's perfect in Kratz. If it was like a dollar, this would be my finance. Anyways, Daryl, what you got?
I quit this podcast. It's so bad.
You gotta at least finish this up before you do that.
All right, guys. I don't actually quit. So I'm just kind of all sorts of off the radar here.
Okay, what you got?
Mary to Flaying Tendrils.
What is that?
That is the one black devoid infest.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I think that all creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. If a creature would die this turn, exile it instead.
Ah, yes, the Anger of the Gods one.
Yes, I feel like this is going to be much better than people give it credit for. I think this kind of fits into more heavy black strategies in modern. It kills your opponent's extra champions.
Kitchen Finks.
It beats all of the persist creatures in modern, all of your voice resurgences. It keeps your Kolaghan's Command opponents off their Kolaghan's commands. And it's worth noting if you infest something after blockers, like say you have a big Tarmogoyf lore, the Tarmogoyfs are exiled for anti Kolaghan's command. So it's just like there's just minor touches that this card, I think, has that people just aren't thinking about.
Will 100% see play in modern sideboards, no doubt.
I think that I guarantee that it will see play in modern sideboards. It might be able to make its way into a modern main board or two, but that deck would have to be a very heavy black deck, obviously, because of the black. But I think the card is much better than people are giving it credit for.
Do you suggest buying foils?
This is not the card I'm financing, but I would buy foils. They're 40. The actual card on Star City.
17 cents.
Yeah, 49 cents on Star City. Star City pricing. They're saying this card's not even worth a dollar. Well, I would buy
foils. Are about $4. It looks like. So I think some people have gone.
If I liked foils, I would buy.
Yeah.
So I mean, if a black deck crops up in modern, this card I think will be in the center of it.
All right.
As a control strategy.
All right, what's your F?
Finance?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go a little extra deep on my finance page here. I know that we were discussing this earlier. Counterspell in Modern.
Wait, this is just generally...
I'm getting there.
He's so, getting to the gates.
Okay, I understand.
It's overwhelming denial, actually.
Uh-huh.
So, 4 mana, Surge, blue, you cast a spell for its Surge cost. If you or a teammate has played a spell already this turn, Overwhelming Denial can't be countered by spells or abilities, counter target spell. So, how many times have you wanted to kill your opponent's creature on their turn?
All the time.
A lot, yeah. Always.
A lot?
Whenever they have one.
So, my opponent casts a thing that I don't want them to have, and I kill their guy in response.
Yeah,
and then I Overwhelming Denial their guy, their thing. I'm blue, you can't counter this, get your thing out of here.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty strong. Like, yeah. It makes you play a little more at instant speed, so like, decks where combat tricks are a thing where you want to kill their creatures, like, make you play in really awkward ways if they play their things pre-combat, et cetera. But if they play them post-combat, then you, like, if you can afford to take the hit, you take the hit, you kill their guy, you Overwhelming Denial spell. And so
that requires you to have at least 3 mana up most of the time, unless you play like a pact.
Gutshot. Like, slaughter pact.
I understand this. I think that this will be the one or two of that the Pride wants to be.
Metamorphos. Ooh.
Oh my god.
Metamorphos into this? That's a counterspell draw card.
I mean, it is counterspell draw card, but it is.
Now, think about this for a second. Now, this takes two cards in order to combine for this effect. There's some cards like like Absorb and Undermine, and then there's also one in like Invasion or something or Apocalypse that was blue, red, colorless,
counter
spell. Is it Suffocating Glass?
Yeah, counter target spell and deal like 3 damage to.
Yeah, yep, it was. Okay, counter target spell, deal 3 damage to target creature. Would that be played in Modern?
Absolutely.
No.
I think Absorb and Undermine 100% would be.
Absorb and Undermine 100%. Suffocating Blast. I think this card is more similar to Suffocating Blast than Absorb and Undermine. Because you wouldn't play Healing Solve, and you wouldn't play... Well, I guess you play Bump in the Night.
Like people do.
Yeah. But the difference is you're losing 2 pieces of card advantage there.
My look on this is
that
you're looking for a counterspell.
Yes.
So you're going to play a counterspell in the slot. You're going to utilize your removal anyways.
Uh-huh.
So you're getting a discount on the speed at which you can use this counterspell. And in the case where you're not getting the discount, you're paying the premium for cannot be countered.
That's true. That's part of the card, too, and I didn't consider that.
Yeah. So... you're paying the premium for cannot be countered. At which point, in Modern, if I'm trying to tell you no, that thing is not allowed, I'm willing to pay a premium for it so that we don't get in a dispel war.
Right.
But you can't cast this turn 2 is like the huge thing. Like,
I understand that.
2, like, maybe 3 unless you have Path or Bolt. But like that doesn't, like, if you're just going against Tron, this doesn't do anything, like, ever. Because you need, like, they're already going to resolve a Karn by the time you have Surge mana plus thing for this.
I understand this.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing. I think I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit here because this is something that we're just going to have to see how it pans out, but it has potential to be much better than a 71-cent card for sure.
Yeah, if people put it in slots that they're testing things in, and it is successful, then it will obviously... It is something to keep your eye on that no one will be looking at to be worth... And no one will play around.
Right,
it's worth trying, and if you find success with it, you found success with it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and now it doesn't go everywhere, though. So
it's
a sideboard into some particular decks, which means that the price is going to increase only a bit. But...
At 71 cents, I'll gamble. I'll pick up 10.
All right.
If I lose, all right, you got me.
What are you going to kill?
Kozilek's Return, dude. Oh, cards. Same. So there's so much hype around like the bottom half of the card.
Yeah.
Like, so if we looked at the top half of the card, Devoid, Kozilek's Return deals 2 damage to each creature instant.
That's really good.
That's pretty solid. It kills... There's only 3 creatures in Modern I can think of that it kills that matter.
Kitchen Finks, yes. Voice of Resurgence, all the mana dorks.
The Devoid part.
Yeah, the Devoid part.
Oh.
And that's Etch Champion, Oriok Champion, and Core Firewalker. Burrington Forge Shender.
Yep.
That's the 4th one. Sorry. 4.
Which might be worth it, but go on. Sorry, go on.
So at that point, you're basically you shaved a colorless mana off of Volcanic Fallout, or a red mana and made it a colorless. Is that red mana and a colorless, you know, change $20 good?
It has to be because it's a mythic, unfortunately.
No.
The 2 damage is also like huge. You're not taking 2 damage in against like. Affinity is pretty big.
That's a good point. I didn't realize that that was reasonable. True.
Completely reasonable. But I still don't think it's a $20 change.
Correct. I don't think it is either. I'm just saying there's some reasons why it's. I think it's better. But like it's like Volcanic Fallout doesn't see a crap ton of play anyway. So like this is just like a marginal upgrade to Volcanic Fallout. But that card sees close to 0 play anyways.
Correct.
But maybe it's because of the 2 damage. I think the 2 damage to the dome is like is more significant than we're giving it credit for. Because what you want it for is the aggro matchups when you're playing a slower deck. And,
you actually want it for the blue decks. You want it for the blue aggro decks. So you don't care about it Merfolk. For the aggro matchups. Volcanic Fallout can't be countered. If you cared about it for aggro matchups, you would just play Pyroclasm. But Volcanic Fallout, you play it against decks like Fairies, Delver, like blue tempo decks.
Fish. Tokens? I play against tokens.
You care about it for like affinity too, so you can get their man lands.
Yeah, that's true. But I still don't think that it's a $20 change. Because if we look at it for standard, we're going to flash this back and kill their Siege Rhinos when we cast Ulamog, Dragonlord Atarka.
Oh yeah, I mean that part is not the allure of it, is it?
Any other candidates? I'm just trying to wrap my head around. When are we actually getting the buyback on this?
Wormcoil Engine?
Nope, 6 mana.
Modern? Is it 7 mana? Is that what it is?
7 or greater.
It's 7 or better, and it has to be Eldrazi too, doesn't it?
No, just 7 or better. Creature.
It does say Eldrazi. Yeah.
It is Eldrazi.
Oh, wow, okay.
So literally Ulamog. Yeah. I mean, let's take a look at the big dorky colorless dude at the top and see if there's anything. Kozilek not going to get played. It's worse than old Kozilek, and they don't play that card.
Rune Processor is a good sideboard card.
Deceiver of Form, maybe.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah, like there's no.
It's not $20 because it's standard though.
Right, and if you're already playing Nulamog, like you're already winning. Like you don't need to like. Kill anything.
Yeah, you don't need to kill their Siege Rhinos.
Right. You have Nulamog out in play. You can do whatever the hell you want to kill.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that it'll see play. I don't doubt that it'll be more than $15. And I only think it's because it's just like a strict upgrade to... And I know it's situationally worse in some cases than Volcanic Fallout.
Yeah.
But it's a mythic, you know? And it's if you can play this, you're going to do it. And it doesn't like... Modern players don't think like, oh, but it's $15. You know, they think like, it's better in this matchup. I need it. You know?
I would buy this card at $10, not at $25.
All right. I could see it being $10 at some point.
Yeah.
It's not a standard. It's gonna be a loss right now, but might as well pick them up when it's going to rotate.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be a good card in Modern to have, but like it's going to be like always expensive because it's a mythic and it's like going to be Modern playable. So like it's going to be more than like what you want to pay for this effect.
Sure.
Price wise. Yeah.
All right. Well, can we wrap up at that?
I think so.
All right, we've covered a lot today. We sufficiently bitched about modern bannings. Everybody's got their opinion on this. I think that we just need to trust the trust WotC on this one, that they're doing what they can to prolong the life of their company, and in the end, we'll be happy with the results, maybe. So
maybe.
Anyways, that's all we got. Thanks for listening. Bye. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.